Latinx podcasters are making an impact. Keep listening to discover our faves, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Welcome to Not Your Average Joe, the podcast that will make anyone a little less average. I'm your host, Joe Franco, and I'm so excited to get into this. I'm a writer, a TV host, a content creator, and a polyglot. And throughout all of these experiences, I've met some of the most fascinating people all around the world that I'd love to introduce you to. We'll have conversations about different topics, ranging from finance to fitness to language learning and wanderlust. With each episode, we'll dissect real-life stories and turn them into tangible takeaways so that we can all be a little less average. I learn, you learn, we all learn. Don't forget to like and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
The views and opinions expressed by A Little Bit Culty are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the podcast. Any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business individual, anyone, or anything. Hey, everybody. I'm Sarah Edmondson.
And I'm Anthony Ames, a.k.a. Nippy.
And we just want to welcome you to season three of A Little Bit Culty. Once upon a time, we were in a cult called Nexium.
We didn't know it was a cult when we joined, because as a wise man once said, nobody joins a cult. They join a good thing.
For a minute, it was a good thing. That's where we met, fell in love, got married, started a family.
The stuff of storybooks.
Even the part where we woke up, escaped, became whistleblowers, and helped bring it all down? You call that shit show a storybook?
Seeing the mastermind of Nexium get sentenced to 120 years in prison? That's a storybook ending, if you ask me.
The whole thing was captured on HBO's hit docuseries, The Vow.
A new season is coming out any moment, if it isn't out already by the time you hear this.
And I published a memoir called Scarred, which is available anywhere books are sold.
And now we have a podcast.
Every week on A Little Bit Culty, we call on experts, advocates, fellow survivors, and whistleblowers to help us unpack what's going on in the cultiverse.
And now we're turning our story into wisdom for other people.
Like, I wish I'd known that calling yourself Vanguard was a bit of a red flag.
Yeah, big red flag. We've got a lot to cover. So let's get this show rolling, shall we?
Welcome to A Little Bit Culty, an Acast podcast about the fads, beliefs, and trends that blur the line between devotion and destruction. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And to learn more, visit us on Instagram or alittlebitculty.com. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Again, this is part two of our conversation with Alice Gretchen. If you haven't listened to part one, I recommend stopping this and going into your app and listening to part one and come back. Otherwise, before we do, this might be a little bit not in the right timeline, but we did say that we'd started watching Shrink Next Door and we've since finished it. And I think that they did a really good job of explaining an unhealthy relationship with a therapist looks like. If anyone has been in a similar dynamic, I mean, we certainly thought we were doing a therapeutic type model. So watching this was incredibly cringy and also triggering at times, but ultimately rewarding at the end. Wouldn't you say, babe?
Yeah, the ending is very rewarding.
Yes.
And Paul Rudd and Will Ferrell and Catherine Hahn are awesome in it.
They're so good. A couple key things with, like, if people don't really understand what gaslighting looks like, watch this show. And a couple of the things that are really key in that is that Paul, as the abuser, as Dr. Ike, always made it look like any idea that he had was his client's idea. So it could always, you know, he could always have sort of plausible deniability, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, he had really aggressive, like, do you see what, you know?
But in terms of like how they were going to move forward as business partners, he never said,
sure.
I think
no,
we should do this.
The seed.
Planted the seed
and then you do that for me? Like,
and then really, you think we should do that? Okay.
All surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, in the moments where Will Ferrell like tries to get his self back, one of the lines Paul said is, I'm working on you, but are you working on you? And that really reminded me of how Keith used to say, like, he'd only matched effort for effort. He would only work with people as much as they were willing to work on themselves. Remember that?
Watch the series, everyone.
Exactly the problem with unethical therapists. And this happened in real life and is happening all the time. So many people have reached out to us saying that they couldn't even watch it because it reminded them too much of their therapeutic experience. And there's so many great therapists out there. So if any therapist is doing any of the things that you saw in A Shrink Next Door, find a new therapist. That's my PSA for today. Back to our initial programming with Alice Gretchen, part two. Enjoy. I know another big part of your healing is understanding what happened to you in your brain and what happened to those around you in the evangelical spirit slaying, all of the mystical experiences that you saw. And again, I resonate with your journey. Like for me, it was self-education. Like what the fuck just happened? They said I wasn't in a cult, but I was for sure in a cult. How the fuck did I get in a cult? How did I miss it? Yeah. What else have you been doing? Seems like part of your healing was to self-educate.
Yeah.
And then you went down this rabbit hole of researching. So in layman's terms, are you able to break down the neuroscience of spirituality, if you don't mind?
I will give it my best nutshell shot. This has been a presentation I've given a couple times that takes about 45 to 50 minutes, but I'll see if I can give like a highlight reel. Basically, a mystical experience is just one of many terms to, in short, describe an altered state of consciousness, mm-hmm. which sometimes people get to through non-sober means, like psychedelics, for instance, and sometimes people get to through sober means. And the churches that I grew up in would call the mystical experience being slain by the spirit or being touched by God. And that would be considered a soberly induced mystical experience because there were no medicines or plants or anything specifically ingested. And so the components that allow, often, it's not exclusive, but some of the components that can allow people to have a soberly induced mystical experience, such as being slain by the spirit or having a kundalini rising serpent awakening, it's not unique at all to Christianity. This type of soberly induced mystical experience happens in many different cultures and places throughout time. There's, in short, three main components to what allows this to happen. And one of the first components, basically what's going on, is a combination of hypnosis, placebo effect, and DNA. So hypnosis, in the settings that I grew up in, we would have never called it hypnosis, first of all.
Yeah, us neither.
But music is a common way to hypnotize people and to get them into an altered trance state. So hypnosis, maybe an example that a lot of people can more easily relate to is when you're at a music concert of like your favorite band, you know, when you're in this crowd setting and you're like really feeling it and everyone's like, you know, if the singer says, you know, throw your hands up in the air, everyone just, you know, fucking throws their hands up in the air. And it's like, to an extent, we're all in a state of mass hypnosis. And often in these settings, there's the element of peer pressure at play of a genuine desire to experience the touch of God or to get that hit from the singer, you know, whatever it is, that recognition from the pastor. There's a vision, you know, like there, we all have our own personal motives for what's drawing us to the setting in the first place, combined with peer pressure, combined with the music, combined with certain repetitive phrases and physical gestures. These can all have a hypnotic effect on us. Physiologically in the brain, what's going on is like an opiate release. Dr. Michael Persinger is now no longer with us, but his work had a profound influence on my life. He's done a lot of research into this aspect of neurotheology, basically the neuroscience of belief in spiritual things. So if anyone's curious to learn more, I highly recommend looking up Dr. Andrew Newberg's research. And he describes it as an opiate release in the brain, which explains why so many people keep coming back for more. Mm. You really can get high on Jesus. Mm-hmm. You really can become a spiritual addict or a cult addict. You're getting a very real neurological hits of dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin. You're getting all of these chemical releases in your brain that give you a feel-good feeling, that allow you to feel like you have been miraculously healed of illnesses, that facilitate a sense of bonding, obviously, with the people that you're with, and can have a genuine transformative result in your life. genuine. Mm-hmm. It's neurological. So there's that. And then I mentioned genetics, placebo effect, obviously, you know, what you want to happen can happen. Mm-hmm.
The belief causes you to.
Yeah. There's a lot of research into that. So the third component being genetics and DNA, the research that I've discovered has led me right now to the conclusion that some people are just more genetically prone to be able to have soberly induced mystical experiences while others aren't. And certain examples of what these differences are, a lot of it is just our neurochemical makeup that we're born with, that we inherit. One geneticist went so far as to try to narrow it down to a particular gene, VMAT2, which he calls the God gene. People who have a particular variant of this gene are far more prone, even in separated twin studies, to believe in something more, regardless of what culture they're brought up in. If you're brought up in Islam, you might believe in Allah. If you were brought up in a secular household, you might just believe in the universe, you know, the divine.
That's
something. Yeah. So it's like some people just are genetically more wired to this while others are not because of other genetic differences, arguably. And, you know, there's the whole nature nurture argument. And I want to tread lightly here. I'm not an expert. This is ongoing research. Their scientists disagree with each other all the time. But learning this is what helped me be able to make sense of my experience, why I never felt God, no matter how hard I prayed, how much I fasted, how earnest I was as a believer, which a lot of people question now that they find out I'm an atheist, because it's like, well, then you must have never been a real Christian. I didn't know any other way of being, guys.
You were very Christian. You were I'm going to attest to your book. You were 100% good Christian girl.
Thank you. Yeah, I was as Christian as I could have possibly been without actually experiencing what people call God myself. That, again, people experience outside of the Christian faith. They still tap into that. Having done some psychedelics as an adult, I now have a glimmer of understanding to what they were tapping into, you know, or what Timothy Leary might call dropping into. To me, it still isn't anything magical or supernatural. It's amazing what our consciousness is capable of. Because to me, the bigger question is not like, well, then what do you call that if it's not God? It's why do our brains have receptors to certain chemicals that allow us to alter our minds in a certain way? You know, like there's so much left to be discovered. Yeah. I'm not going to settle for a faith-based answer and limit my curiosity. I want to actually know. So I've described myself as like a very spiritually curious atheist. I don't believe in spirits or souls, but a lot of my curiosity leads me to places that would fall under that descriptor, like near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, like what is actually going on there? I don't want to be content and settle with an answer that is just a religious antiquated idea. It's like, no, like we're missing out if we settle for that at face value. Like what is actually going on in our brains? So that's exciting to me. And that is what brought me healing. That is what allowed me to no longer be haunted by my fear of the supernatural. Because, you know, even once I lost my faith and once I had gotten kind of more used to my atheist worldview, which was its own very arduous process, very painful, I would still sometimes be haunted by like, if it wasn't God, what the fuck was that? Like, why was everyone losing their mind? Why were they crying? Why were they barking like dogs? Why were people hallucinating? Like, it was not everyone was faking it. I was convinced of that. A lot were, but not everyone was. And I needed to know what that really was, if not the Holy Spirit. And what I found, again, ongoing research, do I have a satisfactory answer? Not entirely, but it was satisfactory enough for me to be like, it's not God. It's not proof of the Holy Spirit. It's just proof that we have a lot more yet to understand about the human mind. Like, wow, it turns something very negative and fearful into something very wondrous and possible to me.
Right.
You know,
that's
for
so
a lot
beautiful.
Of people, it makes them feel very invalidated. Like, oh, you're taking away, you know, some of the most precious moments of my faith, even if I no longer believe in it. It's like, I'm sorry if it makes you feel like your experiences are diminished. Well, mine feel enriched. Maybe it's because I didn't experience it that I feel enriched.
Yeah.
I was never the problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's not my job or anyone else's job to decide what that is for them. All I have to do is trust my own motives, my own principles, know that I'm sharing this information from a place of wanting to help others who may relate to it.
Yeah.
You know, if it doesn't resonate, feel free to discard. Move on.
That's,
you know?
And I love that you're so kind and compassionate. And even say in your book, like, I'm not saying discard your God, discard your faith. Like, this is just my journey.
No, it's hard to argue with anything that you just said. And if someone does argue with it, they're probably looking for an argument.
Or they're defensive, or they feel scared that they're going to lose something if they question some of these things, which is normal.
It's pretty fair. I mean, you know, I think you kind of answered my question. It was going to be about your faith. It's such a broad topic because my definition of faith has changed as I've had different experiences in my life, but I think you got the gist of what it is. But if you want to add anything else to, like, you know, how has your faith changed, your definition of it changed, and how do you decide if there is faith and is there value in it even anymore?
Ooh, good questions. So for me, I now define faith as things that people accept as truth that there is no evidence of. And when I say evidence, I'm talking about empirical materialist evidence, not anecdotal experience. That's very, experience is not evidence to my own definition of these things. And I, again, I tend to be very literal.
I would agree.
So I reference my dictionary quite a bit to make sure that I'm using things correctly, but people, myself included, we also use words colloquially. Mm-hmm. Faith is not something that I personally find value in. It does not make me want to be a better person. It actually makes me an angrier person, because it makes me feel very confused because things don't make sense. And I'm supposed to just accept on faith. Well, that's why they call it faith. That's what I said as a Christian. Mm-hmm. When people would challenge my beliefs, at the end, I could always fall back on that trump card of like, that's why they call it faith. You know, like I just have faith, and faith is taboo to challenge. And especially in North America, you know, religion is so deeply protected and one's right to religious freedom is so paramount. It's hard to push people further in a socially acceptable setting on faith.
It's kind of the ultimate protective gaslighting.
Yeah,
in a way. Well, you can always, it is a trump card to say, well, there's this faith. You don't have enough faith.
Well, the belief is predicated on the fact that you're not going to be able to disprove it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that said, I do see, again, an evolutionary value for faith and how it very likely did help facilitate our species survival to get us to this point. Have either of you read Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari?
Nippy's favorite.
Oh my God.
Book.
I've mentioned it like half my podcast. People are like, dude, I like this podcast until they mentioned Sapiens again.
Oh man. No, so I've read it 3 times. It's also one of my favorite books.
Hashtag new best friends.
Yes.
And she liked Cultish. I saw you liked Cultish, Amanda Montell's, in language.
Yeah, yes. Too. That's one of our favorites.
Yes. No, I loved that book. Yeah. But yeah, one of the things that I loved so much about Sapiens, and I've heard this elsewhere and come across elsewhere, but I think that Harari has such a distinct way of putting it, was that it was the power of humans to be able to tell stories that took us to a level where we suddenly became capable of things our primate cousins were not. It was our capacity for language, which led to our capacity for shared belief systems that basically allowed us to take over the planet in ways that, you know, you don't see chimpanzees doing. So I think that faith played a strong role in my personal theory, and that I've seen affirmed through various different avenues of research. Again, lots of disagreement within the scientific community itself, which I love. But I think that faith does a lot of things. It gives us a personal will to live when we can justify why bad things happen, why we lose children, why we lose loved ones to disease. When we can attribute those to faith-based reasons, it gives us a sense of control, of soothing, of understanding, therefore more will to live. Because how many of us have gone through a tragedy that just made us feel like, what's even the point of life and want to kill ourselves? You know, like maybe not everyone to at such a conscious level, but I think most people can relate to the idea of like having a time in their life when it's like, you're really shaken to the point that you wonder, what is the point of this? Faith gives us many points to this, whatever this is. Mm-hmm. And I think that that facilitates our personal will to live. Faith, I think, also facilitates a lot of, again, good things. There are a lot of good things that faith can have to offer, as well as toxic things that may or may not be intended.
We tell our stories. We change the world. A Little Bit Culty is proud to support the hashtag I Got Out project, which empowers survivors of cultic abuse to share their stories online as a catalyst for education, prevention, and healing. Learn more about the hashtag I Got Out movement and find resources at igotout.org. Did anyone learn a language in high school and then let it go and then have regrets about that later? If you're anything like me, then maybe you'll relate. I did French all the way up into 12th grade, and then I let it go. I mean, I lived in Montreal for a few years and, you know, practiced a bit, but it just slipped away. And then I found Babbel. Babbel is the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions. And thanks to Babbel's addictively fun and easy little bite-sized language lessons, I've been able to get back my French. I've actually found learning French to be fun again. And c'est vrai, je parle français. With Babbel, you only need 10 minutes to complete a lesson, so you can start having real-life conversations in a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 150 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, not computers. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. And with Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Formidable. That means wonderful in French. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Clearly still working on that. There are so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Plus, it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to babbel.com and use promo code CULTY. That's BABBEL.com, code CULTY. Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed, power, and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
When you do share a faith system, you have a lot more social cooperation. As you guys know, in your group, you had so much social support, connection. You mentioned, you know, even just your wedding, like how you guys hired people from within your own group and shop local, support your, you know, support your people. Like when you believe in something and you share a belief system, whether it's faith-based or psychology-based or whatever it's based in, it facilitates human survival. So I do find value to faith as an idea. For me personally, it's not valuable in my life. And it was far more harmful than helpful to my own experience. Like I said, I find myself initially a very reluctant non-theist, but now I feel like a very happy atheist because what it does for me, and first of all, you know, I know that word can be very loaded. I think there's a difference between saying, I believe there is no God and I don't believe in a God. It's a subtle distinction, but very important to me. I'm not saying I believe there is nothing. I'm saying I'm not convinced. I don't believe. I am an atheist without theism. For me, it just frees me to wonder and to learn. I understand why some people find atheism to be very limiting because it's like, well, what are you saying? There's nothing? No, it means there's everything. And we can explore all the possibilities without being bound by an ideology.
And who knows? You may conclude to something in a year, 5 years, 10 years.
Because you are curious. That's so important.
Yes. And I give myself permission to change my mind. You know, if one day I'm like, you know what, guys, I just had some crazy experience that I can no longer, this label of atheist no longer feels accurate to me. You know, like I give myself permission to change my mind. I've changed my mind about many things before. I feel like I'd be an idiot setting myself up for failure if I had the arrogance to think I'm never going to change my mind about anything again. This is something I don't necessarily foresee changing because it's been so consistent and affirmed, but I'm open to it. You know, like it would have to go through a vigorous skeptical inquiry. I'm open.
I've sat where you've sat and been pretty convinced logically. You know, I mean, I don't think yours is more logic. Yours is more experiential, but I've been just kind of logically going, there's no God. And then the longer I've lived and the more experience I have, I kind of have an impression that I can't quite quantify really, that I'm not in control of this. There's something, there's some forces at play. And that's kind of where I am in my faith. I'm not in control of this. I don't know. There's some forces at play, and get more sensitive to those forces. It's kind of been my,
I like that verbiage.
Yeah, my theism, if you want to call it that.
And, sure, there's a physics language for that too.
There's a faith to that, in a sense, that I never thought I'd be here, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Like from the time I've known Nippy to now, that he would even consider speaking to my, I have like a couple of spiritual coaches that are nothing to do with Nexium, but kind of guide me when I'm feeling a little.
I was like, I'll have a sit down. Let's see what this is about.
He likes it. And there's, and like, you know,
I'm manifesting a little bit. I'm doing a little manifestation here and there.
Yay.
Yeah. We always joke, like I definitely was raised atheist, but like culturally Jewish. And my dad's father was an Anglican minister. So I had I celebrated Christmas. I celebrated Hanukkah, had a bat mitzvah. I had this like sort of like smorgasbord of different experiences, but God was never like a thing. But then as I got older and sort of dabbled in mysticism, I definitely have like a, it's more of like the, I don't use the word God, but it's the universe. Like there's an impression that like, yeah, like what I feel like when I'm flowing in, sounds so woo-woo, like,
no, go for it.
Like things are, I'm on the right track when it just feels like I'm on the right track. I don't know how to describe it in any other way. And then Nippy and I always joke about how you think you don't believe in God until you hit turbulence and then you start praying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, totally, I'm bargaining with something. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, there's something in your beliefs.
Okay. Yeah, and then it comes up. I'm like, okay. And that's actually when I do use the word God. I'm like, hey, God, universe, whatever, like, please save me. I have children.
I promise,
like,
I'll be good.
I will be. Yeah.
You're making promises to someone.
I'm making promises to something. Yeah. I don't know what it is. So I think I'm a curious atheist too. I'm going to piggyback on yours. Culturally Jewish, Christmas celebrating curious atheist.
Just give yourself another title, Sarah.
Yeah.
Wait, so Nippy, I was curious when I was reading just a little bit about your family, and forgive me, I haven't read the entire, I'm almost to the very end. So maybe this is addressed. So you grew up, your mother's Southern, correct?
Yeah, I'm from Atlanta.
Okay. And you're one of five kids, like myself. Mm-hmm. I cannot help but assume that you very likely had at least a locational Bible Belt sort of familiarity with religion. Did you not? What's your religious background?
There was nothing. My dad was a non-practicing Mormon. He was born in Ogden, Utah. There was no religion structure really in his house. He said they went to Sunday school every now and then, but never did. There was none in my house except for my grandmother, who used to come down and read scripture to us, that we would go crazy. Like it would be like, why don't you go read to Louis? Louis, my brother, but Louis, I'd be like, Louis really loves the Psalms. Like, you know, and we'd be throwing each other under the bus. And there was no way my mom was getting the Ames boys in the car for Sunday school. That was just not going to happen. Particularly
Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Like sports or anything to go to. So it was just a pointless endeavor in my house.
Yeah.
I guess our religion was our sports in a lot of ways. So
yeah, sports. There's
the
so many different.
Was his church.
That makes sense. Sports stadiums is another analogy I sometimes Bible use belt. To that. Yes, it is.
I got caught in the football belt.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
Imagine yourself walking into a forest. You can see the path and the trees. High above you, the air is crisp. You are walking towards your happy place. Allegedly, say it with me. Anything said here on this podcast about alleged cults, alleged MLM schemes, alleged douchebaggery, mindfuckery, criminality, spiritual fraud, or the like, is offered purely as commentary. Because the views and opinions expressed on A Little Bit Culty do not necessarily reflect on official policy or position of the podcast. And any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business individual, anyone, or anything. So just let these words drift into your mind without needing to focus on any of them. You are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. Nobody's mad at you, unless you're actually a narcissistic, culty criminal. If that's you, cut that shit out. Don't be a fuckwad. But if that's not you, again, you are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. A little bit culty loves you.
Circling back to your healing, one of the things that stuck out for me in your book was that you went to a couple of therapists as you were dealing with the very natural anxiety that would come from your entire belief system falling apart. And you had these panic attacks, which I almost wanted to give Nippy to read, be like, because I had panic attacks after leaving as well, but I'd never been able to like articulate what it felt like. And you did so well to put someone through, like if they don't have any empathy or compassion for what it feels like to go through anxiety and panic like that. But having therapists like gave you these really not helpful instructions to like meditate and have a hot bath or do other spiritual practices, which you were obviously allergic to at that point. And I really loved your emphasis on making sure you find the right therapist. Mm-hmm. And especially if I to put words in your mouth, somebody who has background in religious trauma syndrome, would that be a fair suggestion?
Yeah.
And any other advice you have for, because I know a lot of our listeners have a wide range of backgrounds of different cults and different religions, but for anyone who might be dealing with religious trauma syndrome, where can they go? And can you tell us about Dare to Doubt and some of the resources you've put together so generously?
Yeah. So thank you. Gosh, let's see. A couple years ago, I founded daretodoubt.org. And I built it as a resource site to help other people who were in the throes of questioning their faith or who maybe have been out for years, but just needed a little help sorting through a lot of its after effects. Religious trauma syndrome is one of the after effects that certainly not everyone who leaves their faith will experience. But for some people, especially those of us who grew up in very high demand expressions of religion, may be more prone to experiencing. So religious trauma syndrome, or RTS, or sometimes just called religious trauma, can manifest in everyone a little bit differently. But some of the earmarks of RTS in particular, first of all, I highly recommend reading the book called Leaving the Fold by Dr. Marlene Winnell. She's the psychologist who coined the term religious trauma syndrome, which is not officially recognized in the mental health community yet. There's a lot of therapists trying to change that. But panic attacks are among one of the symptoms, or anxiety attacks, suicidal thoughts, homicidal thoughts, self-destructive behavior, addiction, depression, anxiety. Like there is a set of common conditions that I think could be used to quantify whether or not someone might formally have religious trauma syndrome. But there's a lot of debate right now within the ex-religious community or ex-evangelical community over, is it a syndrome? Is it not? That's an ongoing discussion that I'm not qualified to participate in. But for me, everything that Dr. Winnell wrote of resonated deeply. And yes, finding a therapist was, I had been in therapy for 3 years after I lost my faith, never heard of religious trauma until years afterward, but I still found a therapist who was finally able to help me, gave me very pragmatic, immediately applicable recommendations that I could apply right away. It wasn't just meditate, take a bath, listen to some new age music. You know, like LA is a very spiritual place.
It's a hotbed.
It's a hotbed for mystics, for, you know, cults, for the latest spiritual trend.
When did you make the correlation between your experience and what happens in cults?
Ooh, No one's ever asked me that before. I think.
Yay.
Yeah. I think the first thing that comes to me is people first asking me or using that descriptor of a cult for me, like, whoa, so you grew up in a cult? And me being like, no, I didn't. Like, what? No. You know, like I remember when I first told one of my friends who grew up in Scientology, I remember when I first told him that I was maybe thinking about writing a book about my life, because he was my earliest supporter. He was like, you need to write a book about this. And I was like, no, I'm not going to write a book about this. He just thought my life was so interesting that people needed to know my story. And I was like, no, like it sounded like the worst idea ever. But he would describe me to other friends like, this is Alice. She grew up in a cult. Like, And I remember thinking like, no, like you can't tell people that. But he wasn't the only one. A lot of other people have described, and you know, there's, as I'm sure you guys know, there's a lot of debate over what the word cult is. Should we use it? I now know what people are picking up on when I share my story are a lot of cultic traits that can manifest in any high demand, destructive group. Again, these terms have their own nuances and comfort levels of usability. Because I grew up in so many different churches, because like you mentioned earlier, Sarah, my family moved around so much when I was growing up, I hesitate to say that I was part of a cult, as in I was part of any one group that became toxic. To me, and this is a bold thing to say, the belief system itself is a cult. Jesus was a cult leader. If you read the New Testament, as you guys know, and I'm sure your listeners know, knowing the textbook trademarks of cultic behavior, it's hard not to see the God of the Old and New Testament and of Jesus Christ as anything other than a sadistic, narcissistic cult leader.
Yeah,
I can't. And I know that that's extremely loaded to say. And very many of my peers disagree with me. They're like, no, it's the people, not the religion. Disagree. Just agree to disagree, guys. So the ideology itself, if we're going off of the Holy Bible, is a cult manual. If you actually follow it, you cannot end up a healthy group. You will become a destructive group. So I can understand why people would describe me as having grown up in a cult. And that's, I think, what first intrigued me to learn more about what actually is a cult. You know, like I found Steve Hassan's BITE model of control, behavior, information, thought, and emotional control. And I was like, check, 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 check.
Yeah.
For all of the churches that I went to, you know, like just check, check, check. And for my own interpretation of scripture, I think it's important for myself to take responsibility for how I interpreted sermons, how I interpreted the literature, because taking that responsibility, at least in part, is also what allows me, empowers me to rewire and let it go. I don't necessarily let off the hook the more harmful experiences that I had as the result of others' actions, but I also just find it a lot more empowering for me to be like, yeah, but I believed them. Even if I didn't necessarily know better, because that allows me to then not believe them anymore. It's not in their control. So maybe that's just my own little inner tick, but finding comparisons to cults, learning about how cult leaders become cult leaders, how no one thinks they're a cult leader, how no one thinks they're part of a cult. All that was very cathartic for me. And I think happened in little bits over time throughout my healing. And certainly when I built Dare to Doubt, I built it with a cult's page. You know, I update the site every now and then. I built it all by myself, not knowing a thing about how to build a website. I watched a lot of YouTube tutorials and built it on Wix. But yeah, my goal is to just, getting back to what you asked earlier, my goal is to just help other people who are in the throes of that, whether they were leaving the Amish community, whether they were leaving the Muslim community, a more abstract self-help cult or fitness group. You know, like there's lots of different ways people destruct.
Hey there. Hope you're enjoying the episode. Quick reminder to follow us on Instagram. You can also share your favorite episodes with friends who may or may not be in a cult, and also reach out to us to let us know who you would love to hear as a guest. And now, a word from our sponsors. Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed, power, and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Latinx podcasters are making an impact. Keep listening to discover our faves, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Welcome to Not Your Average Joe, the podcast that will make anyone a little less average. I'm your host, Joe Franco, and I'm so excited to get into this. I'm a writer, a TV host, a content creator, and a polyglot. And throughout all of these experiences, I've met some of the most fascinating people all around the world that I'd love to introduce you to. We'll have conversations about different topics, ranging from finance to fitness to language learning and wanderlust. With each episode, we'll dissect real-life stories and turn them into tangible takeaways so that we can all be a little less average. I learn, you learn, we all learn. Don't forget to like and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I have a resource page on my website, and I'll put Dare to Doubt on that because I don't have anything that leads people to resources in that. It's specifically leaving religious groups.
Thank you.
Yes, of course. Well, we, you know, and I said this as I was reading your book, that I found so many similarities right from the beginning. And then you mentioned in your email, like a couple of the things I saw right away was like right from the beginning, denial of your own instincts, right? To suppress your own beliefs and us versus them mentality and saving the world mentality. And that was probably the thing that I felt so cringy with you when you, you know, when you woke up and you realized you'd been so righteous towards all these people that felt like you were judging them because you had the right way of being. I mean, Nippy and I cringe all the time going, God, oh my, we were so righteous. We thought we had the way. And I think that's ultimately the main through line with all these groups is you think you have the way. And you're right. Although I have not studied Jesus and the Bible in the way that you have, that's what turned me off of it for my friends who are in that world is like, wait, you think you like what? Like, how did you decide this guy from back then that he knows what's even right? Like, how did you, how did, like, it just I was so incredulous about that. Meanwhile, I'm in this group going, Keith is the one that has all the answers. And it's just so embarrassing to come out of that.
And
we are with you in that
shame.
In that shame.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
The regret, the remorse, yes. the cringe.
Yeah, the cringe. And, you know, our podcast really tries to like respectfully just give people tools to look at whatever they're in and go like, is this healthy? Do I want to keep doing this? And that's one of the major processes that people come to us with. It's going, oh yeah, I realize that I thought that I had the way, the only way, and everyone else either was going to hell or just sucked. Like, that's not a good way to be a human, to think that someone sucks because you believe a different thing than them. Like, if your group is supposed to be about building humanity and love, then everyone should be in it. Like, you don't exclude somebody because they don't have the same belief. And that is the such a strong earmark of a cult or high demand group, whatever you want to call it, just something that's not healthy. It's not a healthy way to live, to exclude somebody because you think differently. So
yeah.
Thank you for your amazing book. Truly.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for reading it. Thank you for writing yours and to both of you for talking about your story. Like, I watched The Vow and I've seen like a couple other little interviews and read stuff and yes, listened to a couple episodes of your podcast. And I have so much, I know what it takes to face the cringe and to tell your story anyway. And all of, you know, you guys went through things that I'll never be able to fully relate to as I did, you know, things that you may never fully relate to, but I have such a level of, I'll sound self-aggrandizing, but like when you know what it takes to own up and to tell your story, it's a lot, you know, you're going to be associated with this the rest of your life. I'm never going to be able to no longer pretend that I never believed in that. You guys are never going to be able to pretend that you were not a part of that group. You know, like there's a certain self, I don't know, there, you just can't escape it. And I think it just takes so much courage to be able to do that. At the same time, we can't help doing it. It's like, I would not be true to myself if I didn't do this.
Yeah. I think you live a fruitful, happy life and become more successful than the actual thing that happened to you.
Oh.
I think that's the objective. Turn it into such a positive thing that it doesn't, you transcend it, you know?
Yeah. And heal along the way. Like it is cathartic, as I'm sure it's been for you guys too, to talk about it.
Biggest, I think, cathartic thing for Nippy, we do this every episode, is to just vent freely without fear of, for us, it's like punishment of being suppressive. For you, I'm sure it's fear of God's punishment or Satan. What chaps your ass the most about this whole everything, about anything that we've just talked about? It could be your upbringing. It could be purity culture. It could be the haters? What's the thing that gets you the most?
The first thing that's coming to my mind right now is the most is the limited education that I had. I'm a person that loves to learn.
Clearly.
I think I would have done pretty good in school had I gone to school and been lucky to not be distracted by other things. Sometimes I wonder and resent where I could be now if I had been able to have a more traditional education, if I hadn't had to spend my 20s deconstructing this shit, if I hadn't had to learn so much on my own. But if all the things that I had to learn to teach myself in my 20s were just given to me in regular secular public school, how much further I could be as a learner, as an academic, as a speaker, as an author. Sometimes it's hard not to feel really resentful about that. And at the same time, I do appreciate a lot of the aspects of being homeschooled. It gave me, like I wrote in my book, a ruthless sense of self-discipline. If I want to learn and I want to be taken seriously, it is up to me to make that happen. And I can do that. It did give me that. I'm not saying it was all bad, but yeah, that chaps my ass that. And the sexual hangups. You know, a lot of the sexual trauma that comes from being, like you said earlier, Nippy, stunted and held back from being able to experience a very normal part of human development. Mm-hmm. I feel insanely lucky to have gotten out when I did.
Yes.
Especially as I've heard other people's stories who they actually did go through the marriage that God said they had to. It's absolutely gutting to hear the conversations that I've had with some people who they were not so lucky to get out so young. So I'm very grateful for that. But I'm catching myself like trying to diminish my own pain because others have it worse. That's okay.
I do that too. Good catch. Good catch.
Yes, yeah. Good catch.
Pain, you know, is like, your pain.
My pain is my pain. And I wish that I'd gotten to have more earlier relationship experiences. I wish I had gotten to have more sexual experiences without the hangups, you know, that I like to think I wouldn't have otherwise had, you know? So yeah, education and sex. those are where I feel the most lingering resentment, and that can still get me riled. It's like, fuck, you know, think of where I could be right now if it hadn't been for that.
Right.
You brought up something in your book that brought up a memory for me that I'm going to share from my chaps my ass, which is that I just like you, I also went to a Jewish summer camp, and I didn't understand. And in my self-education, I think that was actually, I wouldn't say it was a youth group it was a part of was a cult, but had some unhealthy things in it that I wouldn't partake in now, knowing what I know. Five pillars were Judaism, socialism, Zionism, and social justice. And so one of the things that they did was sort of teach us and educate us about some of the things. It was more left wing, about like it was all about peace in Israel and not just like taking back the land of Israel, but to cohabitate, which I think is beautiful still. But the point is that I don't think my parents knew that when we were sending me there at the age of 12, that I was getting such an indoctrination into a very quite severe belief system specifically. And I didn't remember this until you wrote about how you were at your youth camp and they did a reenactment about your testing your faith in God at gunpoint.
What?
Which I think is also crazy and traumatic. Yeah, Nippy, for real, you got to read this part. We didn't have gunpoint, but I remember they woke us up in the middle of the night to reenact something. I wish I could remember something that happened to the Jews at some point in history where we had to like escape somewhere and to like give us the visceral feeling. And I just don't know if that's good. Like, I just don't think that was I think it was exciting when we were at camp, but I was 12. I don't know if that's the best way to learn about history. And if it is, the parents should know that's what was being taught at this camp. It wasn't a normal summer camp. I didn't realize that I'd gone to like, because I've, you know, there's all these documentaries, Jesus Camp and so forth. I had gone to the Jewish equivalent of that with an extreme indoctrination as part of the summer fun. And I don't think that the parents knew that. And I think that's something that you express in your book, that your parents didn't know what was being taught in Sunday school or at these youth groups because they were on their own religious journey and, you know, being parents. And I think that's a really good learning moving forward for parents who send their kids places to like, you know, make their lives easier and give them a certain experience, but like find out what they're being taught.
Yeah. And how they're being taught it.
And how they're being taught. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it'd be easy in my case with that particular exercise, which we were not told in advance for anyone listening. We were not told that there was going to be an exercise drill where we were going to be basically forced into a mock persecution. I think if my parents had thought to ask, they would have told my parents, oh, we're going to teach them about persecution that Christians go to in other countries, you know, like, or, you know, like they might have told them what. But if my parents had known that that would mean that they were going to wake me up in the middle of the night and march me at gunpoint, wow, and interrogate me at gunpoint without telling me what the fuck was going on, I really thought the world was ending. You know, I had no idea what was happening until after.
That chaps my ass.
That chaps my ass too. Yeah,
that's just not okay.
I didn't even tell my parents about it until a long time later because I was afraid that if I told them, they wouldn't let me go to youth group anymore. And it was the one outlet I had for friends to like get out of the house and like have friends and social life. So I didn't tell them. Sure enough, when I did tell them, livid, as I'm sure, you know, most parents probably would be. That's crazy that you went through that at Jewish camp. I've heard of other sort of parallels too. Did you go to this camp like more than once, or was this like a one-off?
I went from like 1990 to 97.
Wow.
98. Yeah. So I did the whole, I became a counselor and.
Oh went, yeah. Yeah.
Same camp that Seth Rogen went to, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah. That's where last time I saw him was at that, that camp. Yeah. It was, and a lot of great things happened there. And I attribute some really positive memories to that camp, but it just, I'd forgotten about that until your book. And I'm sure that I'm going to be hearing from friends that went to that camp being like, what the fuck? That wasn't a cult. I'm like, I'm not saying it was a cult. I'm saying there's some problematic things, you know?
just
a severe indoctrination that, you know, and also in us versus them. There's still a rivalry between Camp Miriam, where I went to, and Camp Atikva, which is...
It's a huge rivalry. It's nationwide. We all know about it.
So. It's still a rivalry.
it's huge.
Well, but it is. I digress. And we're at an hour 40, so
thank
we should
you,
totally
Alice.
Wrap. And I so appreciate your time and, you know... I come to LA, can we go for a hike together? And
yes, please. I would love that.
I would love that too.
And drink green juice and do
yoga?
Yes.
We'll drink green juice. And, I can't wait.
I mean, if I lived in LA, I already would have forced a friendship on you because I really just like you so much.
I would have consented.
Okay, great.
Totes adores, Sarah.
Totes adorbs, babe.
I'm working on it.
That's totes adorbs.
You try so hard to
dubstep.
Join in.
No, thank you guys so much for having me. Seriously, like this, it's been a pleasure and it's an honor to connect with you.
You are a gem.
Thank you, Alice.
Wow. How was that for you, Ben?
Wow. What a great guest. What a story.
We will make sure to include in the show notes everywhere to find her on Twitter and Substack and her website and Dare to Doubt. Like I said, I just want to be aligned with such a bright light, and it's an honor to have her on. I hope that you're really embracing this, aren't you, Ben?
Rosé all day.
Oh, God. Live, laugh, love?
Live, laugh, love. I'm getting it. I'm starting to get it now.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We had such a good time. There was one question that we didn't get to, which was, if there was a movie made on Alice's life, who would she want to play Alice? And because we forgot to ask that one, we will see if we can bug her to do an Instagram live following the dropping of this episode and maybe answer more questions to her directly. So stay tuned for that. Thank you again for all your support. And
word salad.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't you dare.
I cannot believe
it. Don't you dare. I can.
I almost forgot. And by the way, right. I just said, oh my gosh, which I never say. And that's because that I heard Alice say that a couple of times. And I think I picked up on it. Anyway.
Okay.
So you got some word salad for me. Word salad.
It's interesting to understand meditation, or the pursuit of meditation, can be one of the most rewarding and meaningful experience of the mind. However, the pursuit is not how to meditate, and I'll explain. If you see that meditation is, you can only see that through negation. To pursue it as a positive means it leads to a dead end. To say meditation is not the practice of any system might be a misnomer, if you will. So if we become aware of our toes, our ears, our body, this is a practice of a system. So in essence, to know one's toe is to know oneself, and then thereby all others. So understanding one system, say your toe, then leads to understanding the universe and understanding meditation.
Oh, that's really good.
It's like a Norm MacDonald explanation of meditation.
Well, on that note, I think I'm going to go understand my toe.
Clean your toes.
I'm just going to try to understand it. And we recommend that you try too. Let us know how it goes at littlebitculty.com. How's that? Bye for now. Boom sauce. Sinking down to the depths of the ocean.
Let's keep the conversation going. We'll be back soon with more episodes of A Little Bit Culty with more experts and survivors. And sometimes experts who are survivors, as well as some familiar faces from The Vow from HBO. If you've got suggestions or questions on upcoming topics, find us on Instagram at A Little Bit Culty.
And for more background on what brought me here, my memoir, Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped NXIVM, the Cult That Bound My Life, is available on Amazon, Audible, and where most books are sold.
If you'd like to help us spread the word about A Little Bit Culty podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe.
Seriously, like, take out their phone and tell them to press subscribe. It takes a second. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. And if you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast to find show notes and helpful resources.
You might also find some offers from our sponsors there. And when you support our sponsors, you help us keep this podcast going. Just don't be a little bit culty about it.
A Little Bit Culty is executive produced by me, your co-host, Sarah Edmondson, and Anthony Nippy Ames.
That's me.
Associate producer is Jess Tardy. Produced, edited, mixed, and mastered by Citizens of Sound. Our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Asselin. I'm Sarah Edmondson, and thanks for listening to A Little Bit Culty.